Hello, hello, and welcome back to Art House Garage, the snob-free film podcast where we make art house, indie, classic, and foreign cinema accessible to the masses. I'm your host, Andrew Sweatman, and today we've got a review of the new film, Nope, from director Jordan Peele and starring Daniel Kaluuya and Kiki Palmer. This was one of my most anticipated films of the year, so I'm really excited to dig into it today with film critic Russell Miller, who is returning to the show today to help us unpack this wild film. Stick around. Really quick plug for our Patreon. If you love Art House Garage and want even more, you can subscribe to our Patreon today. In addition to supporting the show financially, you also get bonus episodes, uncut episodes, video episodes, and ad-free episodes. The most recent bonus episode that I actually just finished recording with Russell Miller is a little spoiler talk about Thor: Love and Thunder. So if you loved that movie or hated that movie and want to hear what we have to say, check out the Patreon for that coming very soon. We've also got merchandise discounts, video interviews, some great stuff there. So go to patreon.com/arthousegarage or find a link in the show notes. Okay, back to the show. Welcome to Art House Garage. If you pay attention to movies at all, then you're probably aware of Jordan Peele. He started in comedy and as an actor, most notably on the sketch show Key and Peele, but he has since made a name for himself as an incredible director of horror films. His first film, Get Out, put him on the map back in 2017, and he followed it up with Us in 2019. Now he's back with a thrilling UFO movie, Nope. Back on the podcast is film critic Russell Miller. Russell is a film critic out of North Carolina, writing his own reviews over at Miller's Movies. I'll link to that and to his Twitter profile in the show notes. He joined me just a few weeks ago to talk about the top five films of 2022 so far. That was a great episode, so make sure you go back and check that out if you can. A quick note about this episode, we do not talk any spoilers until the end. In the last few minutes, we give a spoiler warning, and then we do talk about the details and the mysteries about this movie at that point. But if you haven't seen the movie yet, you are safe to listen up till then. After the spoiler warning, we talk spoilers for Nope, as well as we talk spoilers for Get Out and for Us, his other films. So be warned. Okay, now let's get into my discussion with Russell Miller about Jordan Peele's Nope.
Did you know that the very first assembly of photographs to create a motion picture was a 2-second clip of a black man on a horse? And that man is my great-great-grandfather.
Great.
There's another great-grandfather. But that's why back at the Haywood Ranch, as the only black-owned horse trainers in Hollywood, we like to say since the moment pictures could move, yeah, skin in the game.
It's a bad miracle. They got a word for that.
Welcome back to the show, Russell Miller. How are you today?
Doing pretty good. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, very excited to, you know, so you were here very recently for the top five of the year so far. You know, it's interesting, you know, if we waited a couple more weeks, this film might have been on that for me, maybe. I don't know, possibly. But I'm a fan of Nope that we're going to talk about in just a minute here. But yeah, I saw you had to go to a press screening of this, right?
Yeah, I got to see it last, so we're recording on Sunday. I got to see it on Tuesday, so it hasn't been quite a full week. But yeah, on Tuesday, we got to see it in a Dolby. It's not the IMAX, but it's the Dolby, you know,
the like bigger than regular kind of thing.
Yeah, the big screen and the sound that makes your butt vibrate.
The sound, that sound of this movie is something I want to talk about later too.
Oh yeah, but yeah, absolutely.
They didn't have a press screening here in Central Arkansas, but I saw on Twitter a bunch of people had seen it. I was like, man, we missed out. But I went Thursday, it's like the Regal's version of, like, it's not IMAX, but it's like premium. It's like bigger and louder. And I'm glad I shelled out for that, because it was a nice big screen movie to experience. But yeah, well, let's get into this film. And before we talk about Nope, I thought we'd just talk about Jordan Peele a little bit. So it's his third feature. Have you seen both of his other films, and how do you feel this one kind of fits in with his body of work?
I have just a little bit of backstory on my relationship with Jordan Peele. We've been friends for a long time now. Get
Jordy,
Out.
As we call him.
Yeah, that's right. Me and Jordy, we go way back. I think 2017 is when we first were introduced. I got to see Get Out, not in theaters, but when I bought the Blu-ray, because at that point, I would just buy all the movies nominated for Oscars, basically, and watch them. And that was, I watched it. So this is like my pre kind of like film critic days, but I still really was like training my brain to appreciate, you know, different things, different qualities about cinema. And I really liked that movie. I thought it was, you know, really, you know, it just sucks you in to this, the story, this world that Peele had created. But then I never watched it again. And then Us came out 2 years later, I think in 19, Us came into theaters, pre-pandemic. I got to see it in the theater because I like Get Out quite a lot. And Us was, I found that to be, you know, maybe not terrifying, but certainly it had that scary tone, like it had it down pat, and you could really see Peele's artistic direction. His coming into his own as a director. I was highly impressed with that, and then I watched it again after it came out on 4K. I bought it, and so I had seen them both, but then when you contacted me for the Nope, podcast, I went back and watched both of them over the past 3 or 4 days. And Us, I mean, it's still really, really good. In my mind, the original score is just, I mean, it's almost iconic. What Michael Abels, easily his best work, in my opinion, of the three films that he did with Peele, that he's done.
You
with
mean
Peele.
The score specifically? You think?
Yeah, the original score, not the sound work, but the original score that Michael Abels did is just utterly fantastic. That Nope score is so good. But then I finished Get Out earlier this morning, watching it for the second time, and that movie. I knew I really, really enjoyed that movie, but after seeing it now a second time, that movie, I won't go as far to say it's a masterpiece, but it's knocking on the door. That screenplay, I mean, it is otherworldly. That screenplay, they will study and have that screenplay discussed in classrooms, film schools, writing classes. I mean, for future generations, that thing is, it deserved to win. Pour one out for Lady Bird. Greta Gerwig lost to Jordan Peele that year, but he deserved that Oscar statue, and I am so happy that he got it. And so that's kind of bringing you up to date with my experience with Jordan Peele's films over the past few years. I have so much more respect for Get Out now than I did, just a few days ago. But now we have Nope. It's clearly, in my mind, the weakest of his three films. I mentioned before when I joined you, I rate movies 1 to 10, and I gave Nope an 8, but it just barely kind of creeped over the edge from a high 7 to an 8 for me, just to kind of put it in perspective. And you know, it was a very good movie, but it just didn't quite hit the levels that the other ones were able to, you know, edge it out in my mind and come together a little bit more cohesively. Mm-hmm. We'll get into that more later. But
yeah. Well, yes, similar. Like I hoped to rewatch both of his previous films. Yeah, I saw Get Out the year it came out, and I did rewatch that a few months ago, kind of getting ready for this. And I remembered, you know, like obviously like the concept, like the twist of that is so good. But when I rewatched it, I was reminded just how good everything else is too. Like you're saying, like the screenplay is just so good from start to finish. And just like there's such an energy to, I think, all three of his films that it's really impressive. And I think like it's wild too, that Get Out says, I was like, I knew he didn't do any features before that. It's like, did he have short films or anything? On IMDb, it's like Get Out is the first thing he ever did. I know he was like on Key and Peele, and there's all kinds of things that they were doing creatively, like on that show. And I don't know how involved he was outside of the writing and performing on that show, but it seemed like maybe that was a good baseline. But yeah, just coming out of the gate with a movie as good as Get Out is really wild. And I did not have time to rewatch Us, but I remember really liking it and feeling like it was a little more like straightforward horror. Like obviously Get Out is a horror movie, but has such a social message to it, and Us does as well. But like the home invasion stuff and the doppelganger stuff is so frightening in Us that it pushes the horror a little further, I think. And Nope is interesting that it is scary, but I was trying to explain it to my wife, who has not watched it yet, but it's like more thrilling, and like there's some like heart pumping action stuff that is frightening, but it's also just exciting in a way. And I think it does have the same sense of energy. I think I probably do agree with you that like some of the plotting is not quite as tight. There was a few moments that I was like, that maybe seems like a little bit of a leap, but for the most part, I was really kind of on board with it and really enjoyed watching it. I saw one headline that said like, this is Jordan Peele in blockbuster mode. And I was like, that kind of, I think that's probably an accurate way to think about it. Because those, again, his first two are more straightforward horror, and this is more of a horrific thriller or something like that. But
I will say that I have a good buddy that he never went to see Peele's other two films because he just doesn't handle the horror that well. Mm-hmm. But he does like Aliens, The Signs, movies like that. I told him, you can go watch Nope, you'll have fun with this movie. And although it does have a couple of jump scares, it's much more manageable than just like a straight up horror film. In terms of like making you walk to your car like shaking in your boots after the film's over.
My experience with that was just like I came home and I was like, well, it's time to go to bed. But like my adrenaline's going, I'm not tired yet. Cause I was in that loud theater. I was like shaking my body with all like the big sound effects and everything. There's a lot going on in this film. So I guess briefly, if anyone hasn't seen it, so we're going to save spoilers till the end. We are going to talk spoilers, but we'll give a warning before that. So if you haven't seen it, the basic plot is that, the main character OJ, and his sister, played by Kiki Palmer. This was Daniel Kaluuya and Kiki Palmer. So it's OJ and Emerald. They run a horse farm, and these are horses for Hollywood. Like it's for their horses are in the movies, and it's like a family business that their father, I believe their father started it. Right? They have this heritage in Hollywood, but I think the farm began with him. Yeah. And anyway, he dies at the beginning, and then there is some sort of supernatural force in the sky that begins to sort of plague them. So, and if you've seen a trailer, you know this is a UFO movie. So that's kind of the setup. There's a lot of other stuff going on, but I wanted to ask you, is there anything like thematically in the film that really jumped out to you that you felt you connected with?
Well, just the alien UFO themes in general. I love anything and everything. Like, ever since I was young, alien films were my jam. I've told you before, movies like Contact, but also Independence Day. I mentioned Signs a few minutes ago. Some of these are like all timers for me. Any the Alien series, Predator, anything like that, I'm usually all about. And when I got done watching that movie, I messaged you as well. Like, my 18-year-old self would have thought that this movie was the greatest thing since sliced bread. But, you know, the 39-year-old me is more of a little, is a little more, I don't jump to conclusions as easily. I'm not going to give away what some of my other favorite movies at 18 were, so I don't insult myself. But yeah, when I assess Nope and the themes that were going on, I mean, it's clear that Jordan Peele is unequivocally a master of modern horror. He knows how to construct these sequences and put together these pieces to make you know, just these horror movies that are not like anything else that we're getting today. I mean, I guess what they say, Nolan is like the thinking man's action movie, and this is like the thinking person's horror films. And what I loved about Nope, these individual pieces of the film are just so good. We're not getting into spoilers quite yet, but there's a sequence where there's like some, you know, the house, they're inside of this house, and there's this rain that comes down that, I mean, you want to talk about cinematic experiences. That was one of probably the best of the year. You know, if I was ranking them, it would be up there right at the top. You know, he's able to put these things together. But just what kind of takes Nope down a little bit lower in my mind is how well all the pieces of the puzzle fit together in the end, as I kind of maybe alluded to a little bit earlier.
So you like the individual pieces, but you don't think they come together quite as well as his
exactly.
Other
films. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. If that makes sense.
I think I can probably agree with that. Yeah. I have only seen it the once. I almost went to see it a second time, but there are, again, there was like a few moments that, like, I just feel like it was a little bit of a leap plotting wise. Some of that's spoilery, so I can't talk about it, and I also can't remember exactly him. I mean, it was like three or four times in the film, which I just don't remember having that kind of an experience with his other two. But yeah, thematically, there's some interesting stuff, and I don't fully understand all of it, I think. But one thing that I kind of knew going in,
don't know,
like,
if anybody does.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's a couple lingering mystery things I want to talk about in spoiler talk too. But the idea of spectacle is something that I kind of even knew going into it. And it opens with this Bible verse. It's like Nahum something about, I will make. So it's interesting because, like, the idea of spectacles, like, oh, we're going to see something amazing. And Stephen Ewan has the line, and that's in the trailers too, is, when you see the thing you're going to see today, you'll be forever changed. Like that, that idea of like just seeing something remarkable. But it's kind of turned on its head in that opening Bible verse, because the Bible verse says something like, I will make you vile, I will make you an abomination, I will make you a spectacle. It's like this bad spectacle. And that kind of ties into that line he says, like, what's a bad miracle? Like, what's something that's normally really amazing and good, but like a bad version of that. So that's kind of a cool just horror twist on the idea of spectacle. But I think it goes a little deeper than that too, because there's, yeah, so it's like seeing something amazing that's also horrifying. So like a UFO, for instance, is like so awe-inspiring to just like see something in the sky. But I think it also, the film opens with a horrific sequence that we'll talk about a little bit later too, in more detail. But it's that, I think that plot line kind of ties into the idea of like seeing something horrible, but you can't take your eyes off of it kind of thing.
Yeah, or even unexplainable. Like, I don't know what that is. I don't know what its purpose is, what the point of it.
Yeah.
And that is like, has fear elements in it in and of itself.
Yeah.
At least, you know, to begin with.
Yeah, I have some theories about it for later, but I'm not really sure either. But I think it's cool too. So like their father dies at the beginning in a kind of mysterious way that you don't understand until later exactly what's happened. But then it shows, so OJ is on this film set and it's the first time without his father there, who you immediately get the sense like his father was the showman. He had the charm. He like was a people person, and OJ is not. He's very quiet and like reserved. And it's like, okay, it's time for you to present, like do the safety presentation. And he just like, he's saying the information, but no one's paying attention because he's so quiet and boring. And
looking, then Kiki Palmer shows up. Looking down at the ground.
Yeah.
And
yeah, exactly.
Kind of stuttering through his words. Yeah.
And then Kiki Palmer shows up and she is like so vibrant and like energetic and has this great spiel that she's obviously practiced, but like she's just like so immediately likable and everyone's like, all right, I'm paying attention now. So it's interesting, like she had to bring a spectacle in a way for people to care. Mm-hmm. like they should be paying attention because it's like about safety, but they don't even care. Unless there's like a little pizzazz to it. And then Steven Yeun's character too is interesting because he's very much a showman, and so like there's that in a way that Kiki Palmer is kind of a showman in that moment. He is kind of built his career around showmanship. And he has this painful story in his past, which again, we'll talk more about in spoilers, but what does he do with this traumatic thing? He like makes money off of it. Like there's this mm-hmm. scene where he has this little museum about it. And then he also like minimizes his actual pain and kind of laughs it off when they ask him about it in more detail. So I think that's interesting too. And there's also a whole kind of theme of like this film is about filmmaking in a way. We have the cinematographer character, and again some of that gets into spoilers too, so I'll shut up about it now, but but I like that idea, and I feel like that's something that I need a second watch to like fully comprehend, but I thought that was kind of cool. And then just it's interesting, I think Jordan Peele with the like level of like comedy pedigree that he has, and then now he's this incredible horror filmmaker. Like there's a lot of humor in this movie. Like I showed my wife the trailer and she was like, is this a comedy? I was like, I guess sort of. Like there's a lot of laughing moments in it, and kind of like the relationship between horror and comedy and how they're like they're both about building tension and releasing mm-hmm. it in different ways.
Yeah.
But then like that scene, so this isn't a spoiler to say, but like Steven Yeun has this traumatic thing in his past, and they ask him about it, and he's like, well, there's an SNL sketch based on it, and like that's what he runs with. And so like covering up that horrific thing with this comedic version of it, I thought that was an interesting like little playing with that idea of horror and comedy together. But
kind of leaning into the idea of spectacle, and that's more or less what Jordan Peele has talked about, like this film being in some ways. And you know, it's very clear that he has designed this film for the big screen. Mm-hmm. You know, this is to be a, you know, maybe not like a $200 million blockbuster, but it's designed to be, you know, a big summer movie, a lot of fun, mm-hmm. a lot of, you know, whether it's, you know, some scares or some laughs. You know, he has designed this, even with his use of the IMAX shots, like a mm-hmm. bunch of this film is filmed in IMAX, with the IMAX camera, these immersive, like wide shots, this valley that the film is primarily, you know, made in California. I didn't look it up to see if it was actually shot there, but I'm pretty sure I would, if I was a betting man, I would guess that it is. I mean, it's just showcasing this beautiful, like rolling hills in this valley in California, that it takes you there and sets you right down in this valley, and the camera will pan up and you see these clouds, and it makes you feel like you're there, and then you're looking around, and then all of a sudden something's moving in the cloud, and you're like, oh crap, what was that? What? And so I really think that this, you know, he accomplishes that, you know, that kind of big screen spectacle, like leave you in awe to some degree. And even like I mentioned, the degree of fear of not knowing what this is, what's, you know, what's going on here. I don't know what what to think about this. Should I be running? Should I be hiding?
Yeah. There's such a sense of like scale, like with the landscapes that are so gorgeous. And then obviously with the UFO, we end up finally seeing, like getting a good look, like seeing something really big on screen that just like takes out the screen. Yeah. And I, the IMAX format is like perfect for a lot of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what did you think about the performances in the film? Any favorites or least favorites?
I mean, I didn't really have any favorites. I thought most of the performances were pretty good. Obviously, the characters were likable. Kaluuya is I mean, he's an Oscar winner. You know, he just came off of winning for Judas and the Black Messiah. What would have been last year?
Yeah, I think that's right.
And of course, this is, you know, he's not going to win any Oscars for Nope. I don't even think he was probably quite as good as Get Out. But that's probably just because he doesn't have any of those what they call it, the scene or in this movie, it's the shot. There's no single sequence where he's just like, you know, you can't pull your eyes off of him because you're hanging on every word that's coming out of his mouth. He had some of those, you know, in Get Out, just watching it again this morning when he's talking about his mom's death. To spoil that movie for everybody, but if you haven't seen Get Out by now, that's on you. But no, it's just not quite as, you know, to the level, but the movie just doesn't lean towards.
The character is almost like the antithesis of that. Like he's so like reserved and inside,
shy, quiet. Yeah,
like he's still like, I think after that moment where he has that kind of failure on set and he's and then they end up pulling the real horse and using CGI horse.
And
then like it shows him, like I think he's in the bathroom or something, and he's just like so dejected and it's wordless, like, but it's like I thought that was a really nice performance moment. And again, it's so opposite of like Fred Hampton that he won the Oscar for, so incredible and like a bigger performance. This is just like very much the opposite. So I thought it was cool to see him do something a little like quieter like that, and I thought he did a really good job. But yeah, for me, Kiki Palmer is kind of the MVP. I thought she was so great in this.
Well, I really enjoyed their chemistry, like Kaluuya and Palmer's chemistry together. I thought that was, I mean, they have some scenes together when you like, because they play brother and sister in the film, as you mentioned, where you can like, it feels like these people have known each other their entire lives, and they're just like playing off of each other so well. I thought that was a really nice element that the film exploited. You know, even though again, like the individual performances weren't, you know, going to be making anybody's top five of the year list, you know, but I thought they were all, you know, good for what they were. Stephen Yeun too. Stephen Yeun's in his Wild West getup is that's everything I didn't know I ever wanted. It's fantastic. You know, but he's
interesting too. His character. I didn't put this in my notes, but I meant to say something about him because his character's, you don't really know quite, like he's not a villain, I wouldn't say, but he ends up being a bit of a an antagonist against our leads in a way, but he's such a, you know, smiley showmanship kind of a face all the time when he's talking to them. And yet we end up questioning his decisions in a pretty major way. But yeah, I liked him in that kind of role too. Cause again, I've usually seen him in like Minari or like The Walking Dead where he's, you know, a pretty nice guy. And this is a little bit of a different,
Much more toned down, much more even keel. Whereas this one is a little more, he gets a little out there. His closet of, we'll get into, without getting into his back, you know, he gets into some of his previous days as a,
he's like a child star.
Actor, you know, TV star. And he has this collection of items in a little back closet room that he has just for, you know, special guests that have the finances. I thought that was amusing, but
it was a little bit of a surprising touch when you realize, oh, he's got this whole thing. Well, are there any other aspects of the film that you really liked or anything else you had issues with, that, whether that's, you know, a moment or, you know, part of the filmmaking that, that you want to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, we already kind of touched on the original score by Michael Abels. You know, it wasn't quite as inspired as us, but it was, I mean, that I sent you the link to the song, the Sunglasses at Night Jean Jacket Mix. Oh my goodness, that is just so delightful. It's basically the Corey Hart song played at what, maybe like 3/4 speed, or maybe not, maybe a little bit.
That's so eerie.
It's so fantastic, and it's so well used in the movie. And the sound design too. The sound design was really, really impressive work. Maybe the best out of all of his movies. I would like to watch it again, but yeah, the sounds, just talking about UFOs in general, that this is not sounds that you can borrow from anywhere or anything else. These sounds have to be created from scratch. There's like, I remember the scene where we mentioned at the beginning, Otis, OJ and Emerald's father, basically some metal items start falling down, and he gets hit with a piece of metal. But right before that happens, there's this this metallic sound that's like almost like a human scream combined with like some metal scraping, that I found like really fascinating. I was like, wow, it's almost confusing. You're like, did somebody just scream, or am I just hearing something wild? Like, you know, and, the sound design that, when later on OJ is in the barn, and we won't get into that scene too much more, but there's this like scratchy, almost like a demented cricket sounding noise that was really cool. And so, yeah, I found the sound work in this movie to be really pretty fascinating, and worked so well with, again, I'm talking about more of the pieces that Peele will use to, you know, put these things together to create these sequences that really just kind of blow you away.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to mention the sound design also. So good. That UFO sound you talked about. And then I mean, just like they're in a valley, and there's a lot of echoing going on. Like, so like when Stephen Ewan approaches them, they like yell at each other from a distance, and because they echo, they can hear each other. Yeah. But then also like when Daniel Kaluuya is out there at night, and like the horse neighing and like different sounds are kind of echoing around him, it's like really unsettling. And I thought that really added to the scariness of it. It's like he's in this dark area. We don't know what's going on, but we're just hearing all these things. And yeah, that, again, that UFO sound is really remarkable. But yeah, the score too, I wanted to mention also, it has those interesting things that you talked about. And it's also, there's a little bit of a Western feel to a little bit of this, 'cause like they're riding horses around. And there's like, there's sort of a classical kind of Western feeling a little bit in the score at a few moments that I was like, oh, I didn't expect that out of this movie. I thought that was pretty cool.
So some of the things that I disliked, number one was the humor of the movie. I just finished watching Get Out earlier, and I mean, I was cracking up. Even the movie Us with the character that
there's Lupita Nyong'o in
9 Days. Duke. Yes. His character was pretty funny. I found myself laughing at quite a few of his lines from Us, but a lot of Nope's humor, and of course, humor is subjective. You know, we talked in our podcast before about Thor: Love and Thunder, and Taika Waititi knew just how to get me in the funny bone, like every time. You know, I just was rolling on the floor. Whereas I've heard some people will watch Thor: Love and Thunder and not even giggle, and I'm like, okay. But Nope, I found a lot of the humor elements to fall pretty flat. I didn't laugh very much, except for, I will say, the one sequence that I just mentioned in the barn with the crickets where Daniel Kaluuya uses the word nope. Like, nope.
Yeah.
I thought that was funny. Yeah, that got a good laugh out of me. But yeah, you know, again, the humor is subjective, so anybody can think anything. That's you know,
yeah.
Everybody's going to have their own opinion about that. I'm not going to judge one way or another. But one,
yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm about the humor thing. Like, it mostly did work for me. Again, like, I think Keke Palmer's really funny. I will agree that, like, there's a character named Angel, played by Brandon Perea, yeah. who I'm not very familiar with him, but I'll say some of his comedic moments kind of fell flat for me. But generally, I laughed quite a bit. But yeah, and about the title being Nope, I read in an interview that was not originally the title, and he had like a working title. He wasn't sure what to call it. Mm-hmm. And I think the characters just say that so much in the movie. He's like, we have to call it Nope. And I almost wondered if he went back and added some of those in, because even at the very intro, we hear just like the
some radio static or something.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the sitcom. I think it's the sitcom dialogue, and we kind of come into where we see the monkey there, but we see a little bit of that scene, and someone says nope in that scene, and I think we see that, we actually hear it in that as the opening, like the distribution company stuff is coming up, we kind of hear that, but then we see it a little later when we revisit that. But yeah, so one of the characters says nope in that, and it's like, this there's a lot of little nopes dropped in there, which was fun.
Yep,
anyway, yeah. What else were you going to say? Sorry.
Well, the other thing that I really took some beef with, and this really doesn't have much to do with Peele or any of the actors or you know, the production of the film, the individual horror elements that we're talking about, was Universal. We're right on the border of getting into spoiler territory here, so I'll be careful how far I go with this, but Universal in the trailers, I felt like watching this movie that maybe like 80 or 90% of it I had already seen, and I already kind of knew many of the beats that it was going to hit, even the use of the little like blowing characters that they have outside the car dealerships. I don't even know the air sock guys. Yeah. Probably should have Googled that before we started this, but yeah, like I was able to pick out and deduce from a lot of the trailers, and especially that final trailer that got into the whole, how they're trying to capture this on film.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was like, if they would have left that out of the trailer and I hadn't known that part of the film was coming, I felt like I would have enjoyed my viewing experience a lot more. And again, it's just kind of a shame that Peele didn't, you know, probably have any control over like how they were going to cut the trailer and put that together. But I just felt like so much of the shock value of where the film went and how it progressed. Again, like I'm kind of watching those final sequences play out, And I know exactly kind of where it's heading or where it's going.
Yeah.
Not every individual element. I won't get, you know, that crazy, but you know, I was kind of like, okay, I know what's generally happening, and I should be like guessing at all of this.
I think I mostly agree with that. And I remember with Get Out, people were like on Twitter, like, don't watch the trailer, because I think it spoiled like the whole big twist of that movie, like the nature of what the family's doing, I think is spoiled in the trailer, which is wild to think. I did stay away from the trailers with that one. But yeah, you're right. Like even like some of the final sequences, we get some clips of that would have been nice. I think like on a marketing level, it's like, oh, this is a spectacle. We want people to understand, come see this on the big screen. So we're going to show some of those like beautiful IMAX shots, but that maybe should have been held. But yeah, I agree. Like the nature of like, we're going to be trying to capture this on film, that would have been nice to have held it. There's also some just little glimpses of images that we see in the trailer that were not what I expected. So that there was almost some of that I actually liked, and we could talk about that in spoilers, I guess. But there were some things that I was sure that it was one thing, and then it was something else when in the context of the movie, like two or three things that were like that. But yes, yeah, trailers are such an interesting thing, and it's also making me think like, never watch another Jordan Peele trailer. Just go in and watch the film.
I wrote my review, and one of the things that I conclude with my review is like, you know, next time somebody asks you, you know, to if you want to see the trailer for the new Jordan Peele film, just nope.
The answer is nope. There
That's
you go.
Right.
I like that. Well, are we ready to talk spoilers?
Let's get into it.
I think let's do it. Okay, so if you've not seen Nope, we're going to talk about everything now, and really get into it. So I'll say first a couple of those things. So like, there's the monkey fist bump shot is in the first trailer, and I was like, oh, that must be an alien's hand. Like, just from the glimpse of it, I didn't realize that it was a monkey. So that was funny. But then also, there's the woman in the audience who we find out in the film has these injuries because of the monkey many years ago.
Yeah.
But like, you just see a glimpse of it in the trailer, and I'm just like, okay, is this an alien? Like, what's going on? So it's a little messed up. Like, she's like, has a disability in a way because of this accident, and they're kind of playing that for horror. So that, we don't have to get into that, but like, that's a little bit problematic. But that was also a surprise. It was like, oh, that's just like a person that's there. Mm-hmm. And then there was one other thing in the trailer that was reconnected. Oh, just like, so again, spoiler, the nature of the UFO. Like, we see the UFO in the trailer, but I almost was like, did they hide some of the way it was shown? Or like, did they change the way it looked visually in the trailers to like hide some of that information? The fact that it's not a ship. And like Daniel Kaluuya says at one point, I think it's not a ship.
Yeah.
And we find out that it's actually a creature, and like the porthole on the bottom is actually its mouth. Like,
yeah.
I thought that was a really, so I want to ask you, like, how does that, did that twist work for you? Like, were you, you know, excited by that or successfully surprised by that?
No, I wasn't even like, it wasn't even until after the movie was over, because, you know, obviously the sequence that we talked about earlier, or that I mentioned about them being in the house, and it's not raining, but it's just blood like gushing down from the, you know, the hole of this creature or whatever this thing is, you know, really fantastic sequence. But again, just one of the pieces of the puzzle. And it wasn't until after the movie that I was thinking about that, like blood rain, that sequence. You know, and it obviously had abducted a bunch of people, or like sucked all these people up and then just wiped them out. Like, I obviously got that. But it wasn't until after the movie was over that I started thinking about the pieces of the puzzle. And I was like, that ship was alive in some capacity, you know, just even the fact that it starts to, Kaluuya starts to pick up on the idea that when you look up at it, it responds to that and it will come after you. You know, I guess Jordan Peele didn't like the title Don't Look Up 2, so he just went with Nope. And but no, like, you know, I it wasn't until I put some of those pieces together after the film that I was like, that's some sort of entity or some sort of, you know, being from another planet that just happens to look like a spaceship that we would, you know, all see something like that and be like, that's a UFO. That's some sort of spaceship, you know? So that was kind of a shock that was lost on me, I guess.
Interesting.
I'm like,
Interesting, 'cause I don't think they ever lay it out exactly.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think if they say at the end the word animal about it, because he has the line where, what if it's not a ship? And I was like, how did he pick that up? And I think it's because, like, you know, he's such an animal lover. He's with horses all the time that he could somehow sense. He says something about it's territorial at one point too.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it wants us out of its valley. Like, this is where it wants to live. So yeah, I thought
and
that was intriguing.
And discarding all the metal, like at the beginning, all the metal keys and nickels and all the things that people would have on them when they're abducted, you know, and it just expels the same thing. It sucks up the white statue, the white horse, and then it just comes like crashing down. You know, it, you know, it kind of, again, added up for me after the fact, like, it can't digest these things. So, you know, it was all kind of curious, but, unfortunately, I just wasn't with the program that day or something.
No, and when the cinematographer comes, he says, "You got a wheelchair on your house." And
it
eaten that woman and spit her wheelchair back out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was a fun twist. And like, at the same time, it's not a life changing twist in the way, like, when you figure out what's at the center of Get Out, it's like,
yeah,
blowing your mind.
Yep.
And then I think with Us too, there's a nice twist at the end when you like,
when the
doppelganger
yeah
stuff.
With the yeah. one girl like kidnaps mm-hmm. her and takes her down and yeah. you're like, oh, so that's
it recontextualizes like the whole movie.
Yep.
Whereas with this, it's like, again, I think you can watch it without even knowing that and still enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's like a fun little sci-fi twist, but it's not the movie doesn't hang on it quite as much, I think.
Yeah,
which is interesting. But yeah, once you kind of put together that like it's sort of alive, then like when I kind of put that together in the movie, and then you kind of examine it closely, it's got skin, like the outer mm-hmm. section of it. It almost has an organic look to it.
Yes.
And so I went back and watched the trailers. Like, did they like make it look more metal in the trailer? But no, it looks exactly the same. I just, you know, saw a UFO. I was like, oh, this is a metal alien spaceship.
Exactly.
But no, it's got like skin. And I thought the design of that was really cool. And then so surprising in the final sequence when it opens up. At first I thought that was happening because the barbed wire. So Angel wraps himself up in barbed wire when he knows he's about to get sucked up.
Yeah.
And then like, so I was like, oh, it ripped itself to shreds with the barbed wire, but then it comes back together. So it was like, and it seemed intentional, like opens up like this huge, like sails of a ship, or like, it looks like a jellyfish almost. And it's like, so, so strange. And like, so, so weird. I was like, oh my gosh, it was just, again, spectacle, like seeing something you did not expect to see. So they at least held that from the trailers,
even though
we see everything else. But, it has like almost a mouth or something, and it's like looking back and forth at them, and they're kind of like controlling where it's going to chase them. But yeah, I thought the character design of that was unexpected and pretty cool. Yeah, let's talk about the monkey sequence. What's the monkey's name? I'm forgetting right now. Gordy or something.
Yeah.
Gordy. Yes. Gordy.
Gordy. And then Ewan's character is,
Jupe. Ricky Jupe Park. Jupe because of his, Jupiter's, mm-hmm. claim, which is such a funny little sci-fi, I think, in joke too, like Jupiter's claim, like somehow the space world has a claim on this land almost. Like it's sort of a sci-fi thing. But yeah, I love the Western theme park, idea behind this. It's such an interesting way to frame the story. But so, yeah, so we learn, so we see a flash of it at the beginning, but then later we see the whole thing. He was on this show. And of course he tells us with the SNL sketch, which I read about that too. Obviously, like this is a fictional event. There's not really an SNL sketch based on it, but Chris Kattan really did a monkey impression in the 90s a lot, apparently. Like talks about Chris Kattan did mm-hmm. this impression and the thing, and he goes on and on about it. And that apparently that was a recurring character. I haven't looked up to watch it, but so it was like a pretty clearly a reference to that. But so then we see what happens, and like the monkey just goes nuts and murders horribly injures the sister character.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and then like kills the dad character in the show.
Yeah, well, because and in the album cover, you see somebody mm-hmm. laying on the floor,
yeah.
And I don't know if that's the mom character or the sister character that gets injured and is mm-hmm. and is in attendance at Ricky's theme park show.
How do you think that's connected to everything? Yeah, that's my big question.
So that's, I mean, that's kind of the anomaly of the whole movie is mm-hmm. this whole sequence that it starts to uncover later on in, probably about the second act or so. Because ultimately Steven Yeun's character does get abducted along with the people mm-hmm. at his theme park. But the backstory, like the only character that gets a backstory is Steven Yeun. You kind of get to learn about mm-hmm. his events as a child actor on this TV show and what led up to this incident that happens with the monkey. And, it was entertaining and it fit so well tonally with the rest of the film. It's just kind of this like on edge. You don't know what's going on. And there's like this monkey. It looks at a couple of points, it looks straight at the camera. And yeah, you,
so frightening.
Yeah, you are supposed to be in Steven Yeun's character. You're supposed to be in Ricky's shoes. You're looking out from underneath this table at the monkey, and it just like stares you down. It's covered, its mouth and its hands are covered in blood, and you're like, oh crap, this thing's coming after me. And you know, and so it fits so well tonally within the film, but as an individual, you know, piece, I just didn't feel that it connected enough with the film. There's at the one of the opening shots is what the album cover, what I was just mentioning, and it has a shoe that is just standing like perfectly straight up on the floor. So there's this incident where, you know, the monkey just goes crazy on everybody and starts, you know, killing some people. And then there's this shoe that's standing up in the middle of the TV set. One of the one lady apparently that gets either killed or disfigured, her shoe is off and it's just sitting there straight up in the middle of the floor. And so, you know, that was pretty baffling. Not only in terms of like, how is this connected with the rest of the film? Are these, do these creatures have, you know, have they been here for years and they've been manifesting in different ways? And now they're just starting to like take people out? Or is this, are we just getting a backstory on Steven Yeun's character because it ties in tonally with the rest of the movie to kind of put you on edge? And, but it kind of felt, and I think I mentioned this to you via text, that Steven Yeun's character is almost kind of wasted because he's not in much of the movie at all. I mean, I would dare say he's in more than 5 or 10 minutes of the film tops. And and then he's gone, and you know, so I was kind of like, well, why didn't they incorporate that into, you know, Emerald's backstory or one of the other character that we're with a little bit more? But then of course that's, you know, that's going to change the whole dynamic of the film, and so I just kind of thought it was a little, you know, maybe he should have saved that one for another project and worked that in, you know, separately to another film where a character could have gotten a more of an arc or more of a, you know, to justify having those, all those sequences kind of, you know, put those together to give that person, you know, more context of what's going on with them. If that makes sense.
Yeah. I think I pretty much agree with everything you're saying. Like I have a few thoughts about the character. Like it kind of gives us a little bit more about his character and like why he maybe makes the decisions he does in the film. But you're right, like I care a lot about his character and we don't get a ton of him. But yeah, I did have that question, like did the alien creature cause Gordy to do this, and it's like sort of been plaguing him his whole life maybe? Because we do see that, it at least the way I understood it, it seemed like the alien could control the praying mantis in that one scene. That felt supernatural to me, at least. It's I guess it's left ambiguous, but I definitely don't understand the shoe and what it symbolizes. I haven't dug into, like, I know there's people that are going to break all these things down on the internet, and I'm going to read some of that later, but yeah, the tone of it was so creepy. So we get that first shot of the whole film is when it looks at him, but we don't know that yet. We're just, he's looking at us. It's like a really frightening little moment, kind of breaking the fourth wall almost. And then later we realize, oh, he's looking at Steven Yeun's character. But in that scene, so here's where I think it like kind of ties into his character, is that he, so the monkey like kills everyone, right? And then it finds him, and it seems like it's going to be friendly to him, and like they're going to have this fist bump and have this moment of connection, and then police rush in and shoot the monkey and kill him, which is also horrifying in its own way. So like, I think that he has this feeling like he's one of the good ones or something. Like, and so like when we see what his show is going to be, and like, oh, he's going to unveil the UFO to this crowd. He's like playing God in a way. Like he even says in his speech something about, I think we're on good terms or something. Like, I think we have mutual respect or something like that, talking about the UFO. And so I think it's like his hubris in a way, is there. And we get little flashes too, like as he's about to go out and do the show, he like is having flashbacks to it. And so we know, like, as much as he's repressing the pain and like laughing it off with this SNL story, he hasn't probably fully processed it. And it's like, he's got some trauma in his body and it's like messing him up. But then it's also on his mind as he's like, here, I'm going to try to, it's history repeating itself in a way. Like, I think I can be the good one to this creature. Mm-hmm. No, it's going to kill everyone, actually, is what's going to happen. It's going to kill you, which, yes. So then I think that also, this is my weird theory that I don't know if it totally works, but I think that Steven Ewan's character and then like OJ and Emerald and everyone that has this plan to capture it on film, mm-hmm. I think they sort of, if it's about filmmaking in a way, they can kind of sort of represent two different styles of filmmaking. Sure. And then it becomes sort of about the creative drive. Again, this may be nonsense, but it kind of made sense as I was thinking about it after the movie. But like, if so they're trying to capture the Oprah shot, the money shot, and there's this whole like digital versus film thing too going on, which I thought was fun. And like, she ends up capturing it on this like old timey film. Like, it's like we see something amazing. Does it have to be in 4K, or can it be on like a VHS tape and still be valuable? I thought it was kind of a cool thing. But then
because Steven Yeun's character is certainly exploiting, doing it in an exploitative way to try and make big bucks from, although they are certainly capturing the Oprah shot for the fame and kind of the glory of it. They're doing
it breaks down. Mm-hmm. You're right, because like do they have great intentions? Maybe not, like the heroes of the movie. So I don't know, that's where it kind of breaks down. But he has this commercialized thing, he's selling alien dolls. It's like this whole thing,
Little bit.
And like, he thinks he can control the spectacle in a way, like if it's about that spectacle, he can control it, and that does not go well for him. But then on the other end, it seems like, even though I think you can't argue that maybe their intentions are better, OJ and Emerald, because like he has this kind of respect for it. Like, don't look it in the eye. Like if that's like trying to capture some great art, it's like, this is like something to be approached with respect and carefully and not like, smash a bunch of explosions together in a Marvel movie and like call it that and that kind of thing. And so if it's like more commercial filmmaking versus I don't know, better art, maybe that kind of works. But and then you have the cinematographer character who, he kind of reminds me of like I don't know if this is supposed to be referencing anyone in particular, but he like had a little bit of a Werner Herzog vibe or something, like, and he like sacrifices himself for the shot, right? And then dies horribly. And like, and that's his hubris, is that he's like, we have the shot, but I think we can do a little bit better.
Yeah.
And like, not stopping while you're ahead and then dying. But yeah, so that's my, theory about the filmmaking part of it. And so I think in that sense, maybe the Gordy story is just to set up his character. And then like, maybe the alien's responsible for that too. I'm not sure.
Well, and and so we're talking about the thing being territorial. If the Steven Yeun's character is a child, if the creature or the being, alien, whatever we're calling it now, the UFO had anything to do with that, which the shoe piece is the piece that most makes me think that is some sort of supernatural, like something is going on there. What did that? There's something behind that. And if it did, if that was like an attempt to get, and Steven Yeun's character survived that, maybe this, like him getting Steven Yeun into the second act, is that creature being territorial. Like, maybe it has followed him. Like,
this guy's crazy years ago.
Crazy to think about, like, what in the world is, these pieces that Peele's throwing up there are like not connecting together, and I'm trying to make them fit. And it's like,
And so as you were saying that, I thought maybe the shoe, so like this creature can suck things up into the air.
Yeah.
But I guess it's doing that just like by sucking, like
with like a tornado like a
Kirby type or device. Something. Right? Yeah. So I was like, well, maybe if it was like a magnetic force or something, maybe the shoe, or like, but that doesn't make sense. But I was thinking like if it was there kind of hovering and control, making the monkey go nuts.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing too. Maybe it wasn't controlling the monkey, but like it was upsetting the horses all the time. Like they were running
away.
And
weren't there balloons were popping or something in the, so there's another, there was just a few things that were off about that sequence, sets the monkey off and it all goes haywire. And then a shoe gets, stuck right in the middle of the floor, standing straight up. something. I don't know. I don't know.
And it's also
at Movies Millers. If you figure it out, make sure you tell me, please.
Yeah, I'm going to be watching the YouTube breakdowns of people who figure this out. Yes. But yeah.
Smarter men than us.
There you go.
They don't have the answers for you here today.
Yeah. And then it's interesting, too, because he has the shoe in his museum sitting exactly the same way. So something that he's noticed, too.
Yeah.
And maybe that's, I don't know, this is a stretch, but like the bad miracle idea, like this just miraculous thing happened that the shoe landed just right.
Yeah.
And amidst this horrific thing, I don't know, that's weak, but who knows?
That's right.
We'll figure it out one day, maybe.
That's right.
But yeah,
nope.
Very
nope,
interesting.
Nope, too.
Yeah, nope, too. There you go. Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's anything else about the ending. There's the cool motorcycle thing. He's talked about loving the movie Akira anime film, which I've actually never seen, but I know the motorcycle slide thing. She does exactly the same thing.
Oh,
She gets out. That whole, like, it's almost like this Home Alone style, like, booby traps of like getting the creature to follow them and film it and all of that. And he has the eyes on the back of his hoodie. I thought that was cool because it's like, don't look it in the eyes.
Yeah.
That was fun. It's almost like with the Jurassic Park, like the T-Rex can't see you if you don't move.
Yeah.
It's like, if we don't look in the eye, it won't destroy us.
That's right.
Until we make it too mad. And then it's just going to start sucking everybody up.
Go nuts.
So, yeah. Well, that is Nope. Any final thoughts on Nope before we wrap things up?
Like the hoodie that the orange Scorpion King hoodie that has crew on the back. They're $47 on Amazon, and I am going to get me one.
Nice.
Just in time for fall here in a couple months here, and I'm going to order one of those hoodies. That was fantastic.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned it earlier, so the text right from the very beginning of the movie, Nahum 3:6, and I will cast abominable filth upon thee and make thee vile and will set thee as a gazing stock. Or at least that's, yeah, I mean, that's, yeah, that's not the actual one from the
translation.
Yeah. But that's, I think that's the King James. And then watching Us from 2 days ago, there's the guy that holds the card before she goes down into the ride where she gets abducted. He's got the card that says Jeremiah 11:11 on it. And it's that reads, "Therefore thus saith the Lord, behold, I will bring evil upon them, which they shall not be able to escape. And though they shall cry unto me, I shall not hearken unto them." And so, two things there between the last two movies that Peele has dropped on us. Apparently, he, number one, likes his Old Testament verses, and number two, prophetic declarations by God of impending judgment and calamity. So, I was going to throw that out there, not in the form of a question, but you know, that's curious to think about that he like these you know things where. You know, obviously in Us, it's more of a mass worldwide, or at least United States, like scale of just everybody getting taken out by these, you know, like alternative versions of ourselves. You know, whereas Nope, it's just kind of like this creature that's attacking this valley in California or whatever. But, you know, that just like we're kind of powerless against these other forces. And whether he's alluding to something else, you know, I found that kind of fascinating to just toy with mentally, like, you know, thinking about his use of Bible verses and what kind of a message he's trying to say. It doesn't seem like it's too promising. doesn't look too good for us here.
The original horror movie. The Old Testament.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that is interesting. I forgot that there was the Bible thing in Us. That's a great little tie-in. When it opened with the Bible verse, I was like, oh, this is exciting.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, exactly.
With Nope, but,
what's he trying to get at?
Well, that is Nope. Now playing in theaters. Highly recommend. That's interesting. Like, I probably do like his other two films a little better, but I still think this is one of the better things I've seen all year. Recommend going to check it out. And especially like I think it does successfully do the big screen spectacle thing. So like, if you can go see it on the big screen or the IMAX or whatever, I'd say that's worth it. So, all right. Well, thank you so much, Russell, for coming back and getting into this movie that we don't have all the answers about, but we still appreciate a lot about. Yeah, it's been a pleasure. And thanks as always.
Oh, I had a blast. Appreciate you having me on.
Thank you so much again, Russell, for coming back on the podcast. I love hearing Russell's movie thoughts, and I can't wait to have him back again. Next time on the show, we are starting a brand new film series. We just finished up our series on film noir, and we are now turning to a different movement in film history, the French New Wave. The wonderful Omaya Jones is going to be back for that series, which will be 4 episodes long. The first film, if you want to watch it to get prepared, is Vivre Sa Vie, from director Jean-Luc Godard. That film is streaming now on Criterion Channel and HBO Max. And with that, thank you for listening to Arthouse Garage. We've got a few years worth of episodes now. You can hear all of those in your podcast app of choice. Our theme music is by composer Paul Hunefeld. Learn more at appallingproductions.com. If you want to support Arthouse Garage, become a patron over at patreon.com/arthousegarage or find a link in the show notes. You can also buy an Arthouse Garage t-shirt at arthousegarage.com/shop. If you want to support us without spending any money, you can leave a rating or review in your podcast app. That is hugely helpful. Stay in the loop about Arthouse Garage and the films we're covering by subscribing to our email newsletter. That's at arthousegarage.com/subscribe, or you can email me directly, Andrew@arthousegarage.com. And of course, follow on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. Just search at Arthouse Garage in all those places or find links in the show notes. And that will do it for this episode. Thank you again so much for listening. And until next time, keep it snob free.